Dr. Lauren Hyde from the North American Limousine Foundation. Her title is BIOP Guidelines for Teat and Udder Scoring in Beef Cattle. Interesting development within the last few minutes, talking up here at the podium with a few of us that BIF actually addressed this back a while back, and so it had kind of an interesting discussion up here. But Lauren's put together, I think, an excellent presentation on teat and udder scoring and make some recommendations for our BIF guidelines. Lauren?
Well, thank you, Robert. Can you all hear me? Am I too close to the microphone or anything? Okay. Well, let's see. I'd first of all like to thank the members of the subcommittee who I worked with. And let's see, we have Mark Allen, who's a research geneticist with the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center. And they've collected a lot of data over the years going back to Keith Gregory. And I guess he kind of inherited the data and is going to have to analyze it at some point in the future here. Susan Knights-Wilman, who's Director of Breed Improvement for the American Galvey Association. And Susan is around here. She's probably at the Equine Center right now. She's been working like crazy past couple days now. So, and she's also the one who made the 40-year anniversary DVD. And then we have Sean McGrath, who is from McGrath Consulting. He's one of our Canadian friends, and he does breed improvement consulting for organizations, the Canadian Simmental Association, as well as the Canadian Limousine, and I believe a little bit of Hereford, and you name it, he has worked with them, I think, up there. So let's just get started. And when we think about udders and teats, we kind of have to go back and look at talk about the trait udder soundness. And essentially it's been classified as a convenience trait, which means that it does contribute to the profitability of an organization, basically through savings in time, labor, whatever. And with udders and stuff, if you have like one that's, bottle teats or one that's just really pendulous and stuff, you might have to have the extra labor to help that calf nurse, okay? And in fact, a lot of people, I'm just citing one person here, but there's been a lot of scientists and other researchers who think that it is like one of the most important product or functional traits for a beef cow. And there's basically two reasons in that. First of all, it does affect the calf's performance. Small teats, tight udders, tend to have reduced milk flow, so the newborn calf won't be able to get enough nourishment from that. And then on the flip side, we have with large teats and more pendulous udders, the calf might not be able to nurse, and that's going to impede the calf's ability to receive colostrum when it's first born. And it can even lead to death. So, it can be kind of, be of economic importance. On the other side, we have how the udder quality would affect cow productivity and cow longevity. And large teats and pendulous udders are associated with they're more susceptible to injury and mastitis, we found. And also, as with increased milk production, the udder tends to degrade more quickly over time. And with that will lead to, the cow being culled. So we've decided to set some guidelines for this because we do have like 8 of the major U.S. and Canadian beef breeds are using some form of udder scoring system, and I know there are a few others who would like to adopt one to use as well. And 7 of the 8 major breeds have adopted a 2-score system in which a score is assigned both to the teat size and shape as well as the suspension of the udder. The only thing is that there's three different scales being used for this one system. So we have one scale goes from 0 to 50, another one goes from 1 to 9, and another goes from 1 to 5. And, you know, there's just like a couple breeds using each ones, and so we wanted to kind of make it more standardized. And as far as the score goes, in all the systems that we've looked at, the lower the score, it's associated either with larger, like bottle-sized teats, on up to smaller teats for higher scores. And then for utter suspension, lower scores scores on the lower side that would indicate a more pendulous udder, and a higher score would be a tighter udder. And this, I don't know if you'd be able to can see this that well, but this just kind of gives you a diagram of various types of teat sizes and shapes. In the upper left-hand corner, that would be consistent with like a bottle teat, you know, and that would be on the low end of the scales that we're seeing. And then as you move along on the upper row towards the right, you get more towards an intermediate type of teat size and shape. And then on the bottom, you'll see the smaller ones, okay, which would have higher scores associated with them. And likewise with utter suspension, on the upper left-hand corner, that would be a low score, be a very pendulous udder, problematic for the calf to nurse on. And then as you move towards the right, in the upper right-hand corner, that would be an intermediate or moderate size, or intermediate or moderately suspended udder. And then on the bottom, you'd see ones that are tighter up against the cow. And when the committee was looking at like which kind of scoring system to use, you know, we kind of thought, well, we'll use one of the three, either the 0 to 50, the 1 to the 9, or the 1 to the 5. And we immediately kind of thought, well, the 0 to 50, that just, you know, with 50 scores, that's kind of a little much to handle. Like, I don't know how I'd be able to tell the difference between a 42 and a 43. You know, so we thought, well, we'll just go, you know, look at scales that have, you know, smaller numbers of classes. And it's kind of interesting, as I was looking into this, I found an article by Robin Sapp, who was a graduate student at the University of Georgia a few years ago. And she actually took get some Gelby data that was scored on a 0 to 50 scale, and then analyzed it on that scale, and then took that data and reclassified it into classes that either consisted of 10 scores within class or 5 scores within class. And kind of interesting, when she compared the 10-point scale to the 50-point scale, found that she could estimate real heritabilities that were very similar to each other. There was a 0.99 correlation between the EPDs from both of these. And 0.99 correlation, that would mean that the animals between analyses wouldn't rank any differently. Like, you'd still see, like, the same sires that at the top and that you would also see at the bottom. And then there was also a 0.93 correlation between the systematic effects. When she compared the 5-point scale to the 50-point scale, the heritability was lower. She estimated a lower heritability for the 5-point scale, which was a 0.116 compared to the 0.22 on the 50-point scale. And there was a lower correlation of 0.93 between EPDs, and also a lower correlation of 0.88 between the systematic effects. And the 0.93, you'd think, you know, wouldn't really matter. 0.93, like, you know, you'd think is a very high correlation. But in the world of EPDs, if you see a 0.93, there's a lot of re-ranking going on. And so that's not very desirable really. So she in her paper suggested that this type of scoring system, you know, that people either use like maybe a 10 point or a 50 point. So she took a look at comparing the two again, but she looked at data that had been purposely miscoded and found that the 10 point scale, it turned out that tended to be more robust as far as the residual variance went. It stayed the same for the 10 point scale with real data as opposed to the intentionally miscoded data, but it was quite different with the miscoded data and the actual data on the 50-point scale. And her suggestion was that breeders probably on the 10-point scale were able to distinguish better between classes. You know, just as I said before, it'd be kind of hard to score something, you know, a 41 versus a 42, but you know, there is a difference between, you know, say a 5 and a 7. So, you know, she suggested that probably like helps decrease the possibility of misclassification. And then also she suggested that having a more simpler scale with fewer classes would ease the burden and possible cost of data collection as well. People would be more likely to use it, I think, is what she was probably getting at. So our committee kind of decided to go along with the same type of system that's been going on and that other breeds have been using for several years and have separate scoring systems for teat size and shape and another for udder suspension. And we'd also recommend using a 1-9 scale, given that, you know, some breeds that maybe use a 1-5 scale, those that allow half scores, it's essentially the same kind of thing. Like a, you know, a 4.5 on a 1-5 scale is going to be similar to an 8 on a 1-9 scale. And also we recommend, highly recommend, or in fact require, that scores be taken within 24 hours after calving. This is the best time you're going to, you know, be able to look at the udder and teats and be able to score them. It's a time when calves would need the most assistance. They're going to need that colostrum then if they do need assistance. And then also it's a great time to record other information that you would take at calving, like birth weights and calving age scores. And then also, as far as taking the scores within 24 hours, too, it should preferably be by the same person, if possible. And then also, some of the literature has recommended that they be done on the weakest quarter as well. So, as far as that goes, I would like to make a motion that this committee, you know, approve these recommendations and bring them to the BIF board this October for their acceptance.
Thank you, Lauren. Do I have a second on that motion? Got a second, Christian Renner. Okay, any discussion? Everybody gets to act in an official capacity as a member of BIF today. So, any further discussion? We got a first and a second to her recommendations to present that to the board. Okay, without any further discussion, just to everybody in agreement with those recommendations, please say aye. Anyone opposed? Say aye. Okay, Lauren, motion passes. Thank you.